This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years. This is WGNS Action Line. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
In studio, we have guests from the Rutherford County School System. We have Chief Communications Officer James Evans and also Deputy Superintendent Dr. Kay Martin. How are both of y'all doing this morning?
Doing great. Thank you for having us.
Good morning.
So before we start out, just so listeners understand the size of the school system and for new residents out there, how big are the county schools today?
Well, as far as enrollment, we're over 52,000 students now, and that includes our pre-K program, which makes us the fourth largest school district in Tennessee.
Did you ever see that coming?
Well, I remember when we became fourth, it was amazing, but we're now approaching getting pretty close to being the third. If we were to combine with city schools, I think we would be larger than Knox County.
That's crazy. And Knox County, I don't know what the population is there. Do you?
I don't know. I mean, they're a much larger metro area than we are, but as far as the school enrollment, we're closing in on them.
That's pretty big. So new schools are having to be built left and right. Probably more schools are needed than what we actually can build at the same time. How many schools do we have right now? And again, what is on the drawing board to be built next?
Starting next year for the 25-26 school year, we will have 52 schools in Rutherford County. We will be opening in August our newest elementary school, which will be Poplar Hill Elementary School. So it's out near the Beatty Farm. And then we are also hoping the following year, the 26-27 school year, to open Poplar Middle School. And that'll be right across the street from Poplar Elementary.
So Poplar Hill, that was built on property that was sold to the schools by the Beatty family. Is that right?
That is correct.
And then the new middle school. Now, the Rutherford County Commission, they just approved the plans to build.
That's right. So the funding for the middle school just got approved. The bids and all those things came in under bid, which is great. Under budget is what I should have said. The bids came in under budget. But yeah, the middle school has been approved for construction by the county commission. And my understanding from our engineering department is the night that the commission approved it, dirt was moving by midnight the next day. So they were ready to get going.
It sounds like it.
I think they wanted to start moving dirt before anybody changed their mind. They just needed to get going.
I don't blame them.
And let me clarify, I don't want to cause a panic with the Beatty family, but those two schools will be right beside each other, not across the street from one another.
That's right.
I don't want to cause panic.
They're on the same campus.
Yes. That's right.
How expensive is it to build a school today compared to even 10 years ago?
You know what? Before we came on, Dr. Martin said, do you remember those numbers? Because he's going to ask us that. And we pulled them up real quick. So the elementary school
is around $41 million.
That's right. And then around $70 for the middle school.
So is that how much prices have gone up just over that short period of time? Or is the middle school larger?
The middle school's larger. There's also some different design work that goes into that. The just to give you a comparison, when we built the Stewart's Creek Elementary and Middle probably 15 years-ish ago, we could build both schools for the price of one of the ones we're building now. But prices have gone up, of course, and just construction, land prices, all those kinds of things.
It's interesting because not only have the actual construction hardware prices gone up, but labor prices have gone up as well over that short period of time. I think COVID really propelled a lot of those prices.
Well, and your labor prices too. Everyone's building in Middle Tennessee something, either a business, school, houses, whatever. And so there's a lot of competition out there for those workers to be available to build those. So that's something that we face too.
Is there some concern moving forward with the cost of land in the future? Because land's obviously becoming more scarce as we move forward and as our population grows.
Yeah, the cost has gone up. The biggest thing is that finding suitable land. That's what we've been struggling with, is finding land that can support, if it doesn't already have access to the sewer system, support its own step system or some sort of contained sewer system. And other geological issues just with building, we always have to have the land thoroughly tested. And we have a lot of rock in this county. And so as we know that we've had to sometimes pass on a piece of land that looks like it would be great location for a school, but it's just not suitable to build on.
What are some other areas the county schools are looking at to build a future school in?
So the next big project, we have, of course, several additions opening at the high schools. We opened up Smyrna High School's addition early. It opened back mid-year this year. Oakland and Riverdale's additions are opening in the fall in August. We have received funding for Laverne High School's addition, and that's the next one. And then the Lee Road property is what we're under contract with right now to build a new high school. It's in the process of going through all that testing we just talked about, you know, all those kinds of things. If that works out, then we do plan to purchase that.
Where is the Lee Road property?
That's located in the Smyrna, Stewart's Creek area. We're close to the Williamson County line.
Would that one, again, was that going to be a middle school, high school?
High school.
High school. Okay. And that would be in the Smyrna area zone for, I guess, Smyrna children?
It's in Stewart's Creek area. Yes, sir.
It'll help relieve overcrowding at Blackman, Stewart's Creek, Smyrna High, and Laverne High. It'll affect all four of those schools.
It's wild because when Stewart's Creek opened, they were instantly full, just like Rockville High School. They were instantly full as well.
Yeah, if you want to know where the next neighborhood's going to be, just wait until we build a school, and then everyone builds right around it. That seems to happen every time. People want to be close to their schools. They really love those community schools.
Are neighborhoods still being built around Stewart's Creek, or have they pretty much utilized all the land they could?
The last time that I was down beyond the school, it was between the school and Williamson County. That's the area that seemed to be growing more. There are some big parcels of land where there are not building, but there's also lots of neighborhoods going up, too.
It is interesting to watch where these developments occur. And like you said, new neighborhoods pop up like crazy once those schools are built, or really once the announcement's made. That's when you start seeing these developments come.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. And of course, you know, it's just appealing right here in Rutherford County, affordable living, but also great access to Nashville, to Williamson County. And so obviously that area is just flourishing.
What else is on the drawing board right now for the county schools? I mean, outside of the whole idea of building new schools or additions.
Well, one thing that we're excited about, and this may be something that sounds weird to be excited about, but we are adding weapons detection systems to all of our schools next year. That's K through 12, all the elementaries, all the middles, all the high. We've already got the funding for it. It's already been approved. And on one hand, you think, well, why do we need all of these metal detectors and things like that? But on the other hand, when you go to places like Disney World or a theme park or a concert venue, you know, I think people feel safer knowing that they're being screened for those things, so they're not weapons, hopefully, in the facilities. And so we are adding those this year to all of ours because we want to be known as having the safest campuses in the state. I believe that we're going to be the first in the state to have them in every school. And so the way we paid for that was we got a performance bonus, is basically what it is. $4 million the state gave us for the only two districts in the state got it this year. I think it was the first time ever, actually. But for the number of schools that had an A or above on their score for performance, we had more than 30. And so we qualified. The only other district that did that was Williamson County. And of course, our demographics are pretty different than Williamson County. So we're really proud that we got that money. But we received $4 million in performance bonus, and we used part of that to pay for these systems. And they're very similar, if not exactly the same, as the ones MTSU is now using for like the Murphy Center. Very efficient, very easy to walk through. You know, they detect different densities of metal, and we can help screen that way.
Did the county do a trial run of this system last school year, or was it this school year?
So we actually, the particular system that we'll be purchasing, we used last year, MTSU used with graduations. We were really able to see that in use there. And then that's where we found this particular company to make that purchase this year. And we're excited because we'll be a district that will be able to have them in all schools. A lot of districts only start in high school and then kind of move down to middle school, but we will have those in all of our 52 schools. And then they're also portable. And so when we have events, football games, basketball games, different events at our schools, we can relocate those to those areas to make sure all of our families and our guests are completely safe at our schools.
Of course, weapons is kind of a broad word. So what is it that it actually does detect?
So it detects a different, you can set it up. There's obviously ways to calibrate it, but you're looking for a certain density of metal. And so they were showing us during the demonstration that you can make it so sensitive that it picks up a vape if someone has a vape in their pocket. It's highly programmable and customizable. We're aiming for, obviously, our guns and then knives, those kinds of things. And so we have to fine tune some things so that it's not picking up things like if someone has a three-ring binder that has metal in it. So those kinds of things, you know, there's ways to fine tune it.
Kids may freak out a little if you called it a vape detector.
They may. They may.
This is going to be at the entrance of each school, or is it at every single entry point altogether at each school?
There'll be multiple entry points. So each school will have multiple metal detectors, and they will place those at their different entry points, especially for early morning arrival and dismissal. And so they'll be placed strategically by building, with the logistics of each building.
And we have new wands that are coming along with this purchase that, well, it's really neat because the wands can be set to detect different types of metals that give different sounds. So sometimes, like I said, if you have a three-ring binder in your backpack, it's going to beep a certain way as compared to another type of metal, like something that would be used for an actual weapon. And so when students come through or any visitor, if it sets off the weapons detection system, they'll be quickly wanded, and then, you know, it's a pretty quick process. And I was impressed because I went to the NIT game at MTSU a couple of months ago, and they had the units up and running there. And, I mean, it was a crowd of people coming in, and it was very efficient to get everyone through. So we're looking forward to that part of it. It'll be a little bit of a change, of course, with procedures, but we think it'll adjust pretty quickly.
Is this system going to be on all the time? Like if there's a event of some type held at the school over the weekend, parents come to meet the teachers, that type of thing at night, is it going to be turned on for that as well?
Well, we're working on the exact procedures on those types of events, but the intention is anytime there are visitors in the building that we want them to be screened.
And I'm just curious, have y'all gone back and done research, like when there are school shootings in other parts of the country, do the students come in after hours, leave a weapon, and then come back during school hours? I mean, what usually unfolds during those types of things?
Typically, they bring it on them. So anytime there's a school shooting event, our sheriff's department here, our emergency management people, they're really good about holding what we call debriefs, and they'll bring us in and actually do a forensic analysis of what exactly happened so we can learn from it. So we've done that with the unfortunate, you know, events that have happened in Nashville over the last couple of years, the one that was in Florida, the one up north, all those shootings. We've actually sat down our emergency team to go through those and adjust our procedures. And so, but most of the times someone has it on them or in their backpack, well, they bring it in that day, or they go out to their car and get it and bring it back in. This kind of system would prevent those things.
You know, for anybody who grew up here, it's hard to believe that we're today talking about this as a real issue, because Rutherford County never felt like that unsafe community.
Well, unfortunately, schools have just become soft targets for those things. And we've got a long history of having really intense security in our schools. We had the first SRO program in the state back in the 90s. They started it here. And so that's similar to this program. We want to be on the leading edge of just ensuring our schools are safe.
I guess it was last year the governor also imposed new rules for schools and school construction. I believe bulletproof glass was one of those things. Is that something that is being implemented with all the new schools here?
Yeah, we're either doing the film or the glass in a variety of places. We can't get real specific because it's one of those things you don't want that information to be in the wrong hands about which window is which or which door or whatever. But yeah, it's being rolled out here all across the state, but definitely here.
Who covers that cost? Because that is definite added expense for each school.
Well, with new construction, it's incorporated in what we're already budgeting. But for retrofitting things, there's been some funds from the state. Been a combination of really state and local funds.
Is it very expensive to do all of these things? I mean, once you look at the combination of the metal detectors and then the glass and extra security personnel, is it real expensive?
Well, I mean, it definitely is an expense, but it's an expense that's worth it, right? So just the same kind of things we put in place for fire codes that, you know, when's the last time, except for recently for us, that you've heard of a school having an actual fire? Those fire codes that were put in many, many years ago, you get them incorporated into just the way you construct schools, and it really makes them safer. That's the same thinking behind this.
Overall, all the schools within the county, you've got a top security personnel person who orchestrates how everything does operate as far as security goes. And that's a position that is, what, 10 years old now?
Yeah, our safe schools director, Patty Easter, is our safety director. And then she has someone who works with her very closely, Sean Martin. They're both former law enforcement. They work very closely with current law enforcement and others to make sure our schools are safe, work on those procedures, emergency response plans, training, all of those things.
So other than students getting into trouble for things like fighting or vapes, whatever it may be, what types of outside issues do you have within the schools that involve the need for this security?
Social media has also been a new factor in the last 10 years. Sometimes things outside in the community that come across social media or happen with social media come over into our schools. And so, like Mr. Evans said earlier, we're very fortunate we were the first to have SROs in our schools, and we started that program here many, many years ago. And, you know, a lot of that is we're trying to be proactive. Our SROs, they're building relationship with students. They're getting to know them. They know when there are issues maybe brewing or things are going on. And so we're trying to get ahead of those things. So we're very fortunate to work hand in hand with all of our SROs in our schools every day. And that's why we like to have an SRO assigned to each school, because they have that opportunity to really get to know their students and build those relationships.
Absolutely. And there have been times people are like, do you really need them in elementary school? But like what Dr. Martin was saying, we want them to build that rapport and understand that law enforcement is there to help them, so that when they become older, if they see something and need to report it, they already have that trust built. At my children's elementary school, there was like a bike circus kind of parade thing one day, and the SRO was out there on his own bike, but with a fake radar gun, giving out speeding tickets so that, you know, for those who weren't following the rules.
Poor kids.
Like right, absolutely. But it was that kind of good nature stuff. He coaches a lot of the teams at the school. Just building those relationships are so important. He does security things, of course, too. He actually, I have a son who's a fifth grader who's getting ready to graduate elementary school. And the SRO has put together a slideshow that he goes over with all the fifth graders to prepare them for what it's like in middle school and the kinds of things they're going to experience and see and what to do about those kind of things. You know, who to report it to, building relationships, getting involved with clubs, that relationship building at the elementary level on top of their normal security presence as well.
When it comes to things like drugs and alcohol within the schools, what does that look like today? Because it seems like there were points where I can look back and say, all right, alcohol was a big problem during these years. Then drugs came along and this was a problem. What is the biggest problem today with drugs and alcohol? And what are you seeing locally in the schools?
I think vapes have been the biggest new thing, and that's not really new anymore. It's probably been pretty popular for the past 10 years or present. And the schools will tell you that they have a lot of issues with just vapes because they're so easy to smuggle in. They're not like cigarettes or something else where there's a smoke that you smell necessarily. And that's something that they deal with a lot, but they've adjusted and made procedure changes to intercept those as well.
I think anybody would say they'd much rather see vapes in the hands of kids than they would drugs, you know, illegal narcotics. Then again, there's vapes out there that have synthetic marijuana in them and other things like that that are a big issue.
When I say there's, like you said, there's a variety of things that you can put in them, not just nicotine, but, you know, the more illicit stuff as well. High school principals especially would tell you that's the one that's the hardest for them to intercept.
That would be a tough one. So moving backwards, I guess, to the construction of new schools and the additions, where do we stand on the current enrollment at some of the schools that are undergoing these additions? And then where will they be in the future as far as how many students can go there?
So with our newest school opening next year with Poplar Hill Elementary School, the last 3 years, we have had so much growth, especially in our Stewart's Creek area. New families coming to Stewart's Creek Elementary, they have been going to different schools. We've provided transportation, but they've been attending Stewartsboro, and then that really became full capacity. This current year, those students who come in brand new to that area, they are now going to Brown's Chapel Elementary. And so next year with the opening of Poplar Hill, you're going to see several schools that are going to be positively affected by that new opening. So there'll be more seats available at Brown's Chapel, Stewart's Creek Elementary, Stewartsboro, really that entire area. You know, when you open one school, it kind of just is a rippling effect from that school out to all the surrounding schools, including Blackman Elementary School. We all know that the Blackman area is such a dense populated area. And so really several schools within a 5 mile radius are going to all be affected by the opening of Poplar Elementary.
And the new Poplar Middle School, is it going to be called Poplar Hill Middle School or is there a different name there?
It is going to be Poplar Hill Middle as well.
And again, total student population at Poplar Hill Elementary, and then what's it going to be at the middle school?
Our capacity at the elementary school is around 1,000 students, and at the middle school, 1,200 students.
Now, James, looking back over the years, what was the student population at the average school in Rutherford County a number of years back, like let's say 10 years ago?
So when I started, and that was back in 2004, don't add up my age for me, please, but it's getting up there. But we had a total enrollment in the district of about 28,000. Your older elementary schools, your more legacy schools, they used to hold 500 to 800 students, but it was around the early 2000s that we started building schools that the elementary and middles held about 1,000 students. That's what they were designed for. And then the high schools were 1,800 to 2,000. We've been having to push those numbers up some because we just try to maximize capacity because of the enrollment. So now we are still about 1,000 for elementary schools when we build them. Middle schools are about 1,200. And then high schools are, depending on the school, can be 2,300. Some of them are capacity of 2,500. So it is increasing. There's also some talk, though, about because of land scarcity that we're going to have to look at a different structure moving forward down the road a little bit about building smaller schools again that fit into smaller spaces to help balance those enrollments too. But that's still being reviewed at this point.
If you were to move forward with building smaller schools at different locations, is that going to be a little tougher just because of the fact that you're going to have more locations for sites of schools as opposed to fewer?
Well, yes, and there's some operational costs, of course, because you have staples within the school that every school has to have. Like you have to have, of course, a principal, an assistant principal, your office staff, those kinds of things. So that's some of the factors that are being considered. But like we talked about earlier, the availability of large pieces of land are becoming more scarce. So we've got to look at some different ways of maximizing these pockets in the county, especially as our county expands out further south, of how we're going to accommodate that growth.
Do you ever foresee tearing down existing schools and building something new that's maybe taller, a four-story operation as opposed to a one or two?
Yeah, there's been some talk about that with some of our older schools. McFadden is mentioned sometimes about needing to be replaced because it's becoming so hard to maintain because it's one of our oldest buildings. I think it was 1938 when it was constructed. So those kinds of schools potentially, but of course, we've got to just balance that with making sure that we're adding seats too. So
we've tried to use the most of the buildings that we have had throughout the years. For example, Daniel McKee Alternative School, Smyrna West Alternative School. Those are two of some of our older buildings within the district, but we still want to utilize those. But then they are getting older as well. And so needing some renovation and rebuilding in some of those locations, that's another option that we're looking at as well. And then, as you know, with the newest additions at Smyrna High School, Oakland High School, Riverdale High School, and now Laverne High School, a couple years ago, we did an addition at Siegel High. So we're constantly, we've had Rockville Middle has already had an addition. And so also trying to utilize the property and land that we already have and build onto those schools when we can as well.
When you look at Daniel McKee as an example, when you drive past it, it doesn't look like a very large parcel of land. Is it larger than what it looks like? Does it go further back? And is there room for the larger school?
When you drive by and you see the main building there, there is pretty good size of land on the backside of the main building that could be utilized for a new build there.
That could be, I guess, utilized so you build back as opposed to towards the roadway.
Correct. And it's one of those, Mr. Evans and I have been here a long time in the district. So I know this is year 26 for me. And in all of that time, we've only always had Smyrna West and Daniel McKee. So like he said, when you are going from 20,000, 25,000 students and now 50,000 plus, that's also a need that we have is making those facilities just a little bit bigger as well.
We need to take a short break and then we'll come right back. But with us today in studio, we have Dr. Kay Martin and also James Evans, both from the Rutherford County Schools.
We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit
mte.com. Middle Tennessee Electric, serving to make life better since 1936.
This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years. The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
No middlemen.
No mystery.
Just fresh picked produce straight from the Tennessee dirt to your dinner table.
Rutherford County Farmers Market,
where our family feeds your family.
Rutherford County Farmers Market. There's something fresh every week. Tuesdays and Fridays, 7 to 1 on John R. Rice Boulevard.
Hi, I'm Lee Colvin, your Edward Jones Financial Advisor. And while you've heard the saying, slow and steady wins the race, that same concept can be applied to long-term investing. Investing a little bit at a time on a regular basis can really add up. We call this systematic investing, and though it doesn't guarantee a profit or prevent a loss, it's a way to take advantage of market volatility instead of enduring it. Give me a call, Lee Colvin, at 615-907-7056. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Does your home need freshening up? Let our family at Farrah Construction help you. We do painting, new flooring, anything that you need. If you can dream it, Farrah Construction can turn it into reality. Farrah Construction offers high-quality craftsmanship, quick response, and attention to detail. For home restoration at a price you can afford, Farrah Construction can get the job done, no matter how big or small it is. I'm Ron Hall. Shop local. Let our family business help you. Farrah Construction Company.
Here at Animal City, we keep your pet protected, safe, and comfortable. So whether it's helping you find the perfect bedding for your critter or a toy that your dog will absolutely love, let our experience help you here at Animal City. Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City, inviting your family to come do business with my family. Here at Animal City, we are very proud to be family-owned and serving Murfreesboro since 1990. You can find us at 919 Northwest Broad Street here in Murfreesboro, Animal City.
This is a WGNS Action Line. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
In studio with us today from the Rutherford County School System, we have Dr. Cade Martin and also James Evans, again, from the Rutherford County Schools. And what else is happening within the county?
One thing that we've been doing all week is this is Teacher Appreciation Week. It's that time of year where we're wrapping things up. There's still some testing going on. Graduations start next week. If you're interested in graduation, there are 12 of them starting next Wednesday. So plenty of those to go to. The schedule's on our website. Lots of kids graduating, which is a great thing. But we always like to celebrate teachers in May. It is National Teacher Appreciation Week. And so one fun thing that we've been doing as a school district is asking people to share some anecdotes and stories about their favorite teachers. And we've been running those on our social media channels this week. And so we wanted to turn the tables on you, Scott, because you're the one that gets always asked the questions. And that's not fun, or not fair that you get to ask the questions and we don't. So you grew up here. What was your, or maybe you had more than one, hopefully, but what's a story you can tell us about one of your favorite teachers?
Man, I had quite a few that I really liked. I know Miss Swafford, I think, was my eighth grade teacher. I really liked her. And then Miss Holland, also at Central Middle School. The one that stands out is probably Miss Davis at Mitchell Nelson. And I don't know if it's because that's the year that the Space Shuttle Challenger blew up. And so I remember watching that in her class. I would say she would be one of the top as well.
Okay. And so I also asked Dr. Martin to be prepared to answer hers on air this morning.
You know, this is a fun topic for me because I have so many people being a Rutherford County school product that just really poured into me. And from my teachers from elementary school to all of my coaches in middle school and high school. And so my list could go on and on for sure, because they really did just leave a lasting impact on me. But one of my favorite all-time teachers that even really inspired me to be an educator just because I wanted to be just like her was Cheryl Craig. I had her at Reeves Rogers for sixth grade. She had so much energy and spunk, and it was like she knew every single one of us on a personal level and cared about us deeply. She made every one of her students, I know she probably had, 20 plus students in that class in sixth grade, and she made every one of us feel like we were the only one and that we were her favorite. And I know you're not supposed to have favorites as a teacher, but that's the way she made us feel. And I think every one of us just wanted to do so good for her and be the best that we could. She also made learning so much fun. And so she really inspired me. And again, I could go on and on. I had a great K-12 experience. And then even here in college, I know I had Dr. Bob Bullen for my first ever college class on campus. I can see him right now, 8 o'clock, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And actually, when I got this newest role here in Rutherford County, one day I had a letter left for me at the front office, at the central office, and he had written me a handwritten letter, just encouraging me and telling me how proud he was. And really, he was just still being a mentor for me. And so there are so many people that have just poured into me when they didn't have to. It's really molded me, and I hope I can represent them and carry on their legacy in a small way.
And I actually grew up in Cheatham County, so I'll mention a couple, but I want to focus on another teacher that's here in this county. But Mr. Merritt was my band director in high school, and is the one that said, "Why aren't you going to university?" Because I was planning on going to a technical college like a lot of my family had. And I was like, well, that's just, I never thought about it. And so he actually drove me to an audition in Cookeville for Tennessee Tech originally. He just one of those that just really just encouraged his students and got me thinking about going to college. And that's what led me to do that. But Mr. King is also one. And he always asked these just really profound questions and made us think about it, got us really big about critical thinking. And I can remember the first day in his class, the first question, and then just leaving that classroom just kind of feeling like I was on fire, like engaged so much. And he was a really great teacher. But locally here, I want to brag on one of my own kids' teachers. Lori Phillips at Campus School is by far the favorite teacher we've ever had. We've had a number of great teachers. But my youngest son, she loves him so much. They have this bond. She goes and visits him every day. He'll come tell me, Dr. or Miss Phillips came by to see me today. And one day he wasn't there a few months ago. We were considering changing schools for next year. And she texted me and said, "Your son's not here. I hear he's at another school." I'm crushed. And she met with me and said, "If you guys need help getting him to school, I'm happy to come pick him up." And that's not at all what it was. And I just explained to her, we were just looking at options. But that kind of level of commitment and love. And she said, when he leaves here in fifth grade, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. They're just so close. And she's just his biggest cheerleader. And I just always like to give her a shout out.
You know, looking back, I don't remember any teacher I ever had a problem with or didn't like, you know, within the county schools.
That's a different question. And we could do that one if you'd like. Kay and I have a couple of those.
But do you ever really run across somebody who says, "Well, I couldn't stand so-and-so"? Because I don't hear that a lot now that I think about it.
You know, there's always personality issues, of course.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, some teachers are with different families, just gel better or whatever. But, typically you're not going to find a bad experience in our school system. And that's what we tell a lot of newcomers when they come, like, "Who's the best teacher?" It's like, well, that's hard to answer because they're all great. It's just really the ones that fit you the best.
And, you know, those teachers, our schools, you know, they truly are the heart of our communities. If you think about it, Our children spend more waking hours with their teachers and their classmates, more so than even our own family. You know, we pick them up from school, we're rushing doing this, extracurricular, running to do this, all the things. But our teachers are just those people that are with those kids every day, pouring into them. Like Mr. Evans said, that teacher, his encouragement is what has made this great career. You know, who would Rutherford County be without James Evans? Everybody knows James Evans. He's a celebrity in Rutherford County schools. And so that one just encouragement, motivation from that someone who believed in him. And that's what our teachers do. They are just that light and that inspiration and just that encouragement, that smiling face of, "We believe in you. The sky's the limit. You can do this." And so our teachers, you can't put a price value on them and what they do for our schools, for our communities, and most importantly, for our students.
Yeah, it's those little interactions that are happening every day that mean so much to the students, you know, big and small.
And kids love you on the days that you call and say, "Hey, school's closed today. Snow."
And then they hate me when I say we're going back to
that's
school.
Right, that's right.
It's love is fickle.
You know, I had one teacher, it was a biology class, And I don't know if you remember in the biology classrooms, they used to have plugs at every single desk within the classroom. And I don't think they have that anymore, which is probably a good thing. But Mr. Nunley said, now, don't do anything stupid, like stick something in these plugs. And of course, I knew what would happen. So, of course, I took two paper clips and put them in, then dropped another on top of it. And it made a big, loud sound. And I was very proud of myself at the time. But he just looked at me like, Scott, that was really stupid. But, you know, those are memories, too, though, that we have growing up in schools. And I think the teachers have a really profound way of either taking something bad that happens and doing something, either, you know, going this way really negative with it, or doing something and taking it this route and making that student not feel quite as dumb, but yet they're just able to handle stuff really well. The majority of teachers that I run across, they do a really good job at even those hard moments when I'm sure they want to yell at the kids, but they treat it a different way.
Well, you know, in a world where there are so many differences, no matter where you go, no matter who you meet, everybody has a favorite teacher, a teacher that has left a lasting imprint on them and impacted them and influenced them to be who they are today. So that's one commonality that we can all find, is who is that favorite teacher or teachers? Who made those impressions? Who supported you? Even when on the days where maybe you were a little more difficult to love or encourage.
I was a class clown throughout my entire school career.
Dr. Martin was too. That's funny that you bring that up.
I can't picture that.
It's funny that you say that. So, no, if you know me, I was not the class clown. But, you know, a lot of times opposites attract. And my husband was probably a little more personality in the classroom than I was. We were actually talking about that last night. And ironically enough, he is now a teacher and a coach as well. And he's a PE teacher at one of our elementary schools here in Rutherford County. And he is just so loved by his whole school. You know, just being, again, a male, positive male figure. Of course, every elementary student loves PE class, so that also helps. But it's funny how sometimes he'll come home with a story, and I just remind him, you may or may not have been one of those students in your teacher's classroom many years ago, too.
You know, and I don't know if it's still the exact same way today within the schools, but you've got, it's basically a family within the school, because you've got parents, you've got students who walk along with that teacher if that teacher ends up going through some type of struggle in her life. You know, it could be a cancer diagnosis. But I just remember time and time again where things like that would come up. And next thing you know, you have parents coming in. They're, you know, helping out the teacher. They're bringing her flowers or whatever the case is. But
absolutely.
Does that still happen?
Absolutely. And, you know, we just want to be in Rutherford County. We want to be an extension of every family. That core family at home, we want to be an extension of that in our school communities. And you see that every day in our schools. It's bittersweet when our fifth graders move to middle school, when those eighth graders move to high school. Next week, we're going to have all of our graduations, and it's a great celebration. But you'll also see moms and dads who, it's really bittersweet for them, too, because that may be their last child going through the schools. And, you know, like I said earlier, we spend so much time together. We really are an extended family. And that's something that I know is a goal for Dr. Sullivan and our district, even though we are growing exponentially. And we, you know, for the last 25 years, one thing that has been consistent is growth here. But we want to keep that small town community feel, just like you and I had when we grew up here. And we want to know our families, and we want them to know them. And it's a partnership working with them to serve them and their families.
Now, when you look at that growth and what is expected in the near future, What types of numbers are we looking at, you know, in 5 or 10 years from now? Because I know there's studies out by the UT Boyd Research Center, but I don't know that those studies break down. All right, there's going to be X amount of students or those who are age 10 to 15 in Rutherford County. But do we have any ideas on that forecast?
So historically, we have grown about 1,000 students per school year. That has been a consistent trend. In the COVID era, that did slow down just a little. But if you look back at the past 20 years, that has been the consistent trend. And so that's what we're planning for as we plan ahead, our five-year plan, and look ahead. Hopefully that will kind of slow down. But we also know trends are telling us it may not.
And of course, there's going to come a time where that 1,000 to 1,500 plus students is going to be much larger. I mean, that number of students who grow by each school, it's going to be a larger number at some point.
Right. And it's not just one area that's growing too. That's the other thing. It's growing all over. So people say, we'll just build one new school and that should take care of it. Well, no, because it's in eight different corners of the county. You know, I-24 and 840 are popular corridors, but there are other areas too that are growing. Eagleville's starting to see a pickup, as you've seen. And so it's just trying to stay on top of it. That's why we look at it every year to see if the growth trends are changing at all. So
we're already out of time. Again, with us today, we have James Evans and Dr. Kay Martin from the Rutherford County Schools. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Peter Demas, and our family's inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's restaurant. When Kristen said, okay, you know, when we're going to do the remodel, because we're celebrating 35 years, we also wanted to make it more open and inviting. So we made the lobby a lot more open, booth seats a little bit different colors to kind of still keep it a little up to date, make it fresh. We wanted to make it cozier, make it a little bit brighter for people to see, to pay homage to where we have been the entire time. Demas's restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.